Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 26th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. With this week, homebrewer Christopher Owen shares his Belgian yeast experiment that he did with the help of the Lagers Homebrewing Club up in Louisville, Kentucky. How do six Belgian yeasts stack up against each other? Stay tuned to find out. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our 2012 Brewers Logbooks are still in the house. You can log 50 batches of beer with the logbooks, and we've got calendars in the front where you can track your brewing sessions and how the fermentations go and such as that. Very cool stuff. Check them out. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And we have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook as well at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. And, of course, there is an amazon.co.uk link on there, too. We have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And we've got iPhone and Android apps out there. And we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, too. And we're on the Stitcher app as well. I bundled my entry into the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment a couple of days ago. As you'll remember, we're testing whether Trub makes a difference in the beer if you transfer it into the fermenter. I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but I will tell you that I am seeing a difference in clarity. So if you're playing along at home, make sure to make a note of that if you see it as well. I'm looking forward to hearing all the results. The deadline is February 20th. Registration for the National Homebrewers Conference opens February 1st. This year, the conference will be in June in Seattle, and it has sold out for the past few years, so get your reservations made. And if you're going to be in Seattle and want to conduct an experiment that we can talk about on the show, please let me know, and we can coordinate. Had a lot of fun last year in San Diego sampling homebrewer experiments from our listeners, and I hope we can do the same in Seattle this year. So if you're interested in getting together with us and doing an experiment that we can talk about on the show, please drop me a line. Speaking of experiments, let's go on to this week's. We've tasted and taken part in a few experiments comparing different yeasts, and they're always fun and interesting in what we find. But this experiment from Christopher Owen and the members of the Lagers Club has an added dimension in the way they collected and reported data from their participants. Well, Christopher Owen, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're up there in Louisville, Kentucky. Did I say it right?
That's right. Louisville.
Louisville. You got to get a little bit of Tom Brokaw in there.
Right.
And who have you got with you up there?
We've got Leah, president of the Lagers Homebrew Club, and Paul, the owner of My Old Kentucky Homebrew.
Welcome, everybody.
Great.
Thanks for having us.
We are so excited that you included us in this experiment, or at least let us play along. Talk about what you've done here.
Well, we have a learning session before every meeting at our homebrew club, and I got the crazy idea that I wanted to play with some Belgian yeast strains because there's so many available on continuous lineups as well as the seasonal strains, and just wanted to really know how different they are, how much flavor difference do you notice, and possibly even, you know, which one might be best for doing in your competition beers.
And so you designed an experiment splitting one base beer into separate batches for each of these six Belgian-style yeasts to digest and have fun with. What was the base beer like?
What we did is we took a Belgian triple recipe, just Pilsner aromatic and sugar. And we dropped the gravity down a little bit, partly because we didn't want everybody in the club drinking 9% Belgian triples, six of them. And plus it also in the size that we did the fermentations in at that gravity at the 2 gallons was one tube of yeast was a perfect pitch for it. So it worked out well.
So you, but you did a pretty elaborate fermentation schedule. Talk about that.
Well, we got from Brew Like a Monk. I noticed that the majority of the Belgian breweries raised temperature during their ferment, and all of the Trappist breweries increased the temperature during the ferment. So I figured these strains are coming from there. I should mimic that when I do the fermentation. So when I pitched them at right in the mid-60s, 66, and let it go up to 68, and I kept it there for a day or two, and then put a heat wrap on all six of them, began increasing the temperature 2 degrees a day, and until it got up to 80 degrees. And then let it sit there for a day or two, and then brought it back down at the same rate, and let it hold out at 70 for a couple more days. And then turn the heat off and let it cool down naturally.
And then to clarify, you cold crashed to 36 degrees Fahrenheit for a couple of weeks after that. To clarify,
that's right. So we I think we end up letting them go 24 days, and then we crash cooled them, get all the yeast to drop out. We did that partly because we were noticing some color differences with the beers, and we were curious if it was just reflectivity of the different yeast strains based on how they flocculate. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to get it cold, get them all to crash out, and see if there really was a color difference, which there wasn't. Ah.
So the and then you force carbonated.
I did.
And bottle them. Mm-hmm. So talk about the six strains that you used.
So we went, there are a lot of good ones out there, but we went with the White Labs. We did the 500, the 510, the 530, the 540, 550, and 570. So.
And respectively, you say that they're from Chimay, Orval, Westmalle, Rochefort, Achouf, and Duvel.
That's correct.
And you wanted to, you had the beers evaluated by a small panel of BJCP certified judges to make sure, I guess, that they were within the tolerances for the style?
That's correct. A couple things. We wanted to just make sure they were good, clean beers that we presented to the club. We wanted to make sure they were within style, also understanding that we dropped the gravity a little bit. And then also the judges helped me formulate that sheet and make sure any flavors that they got, we got, were on the sheet, and then also kind of help construct it a little bit.
And you, this sheet that you're talking about, usually when people, you know, judge or evaluate beers, they're looking at sort of the model that the BJCP, the Beer Judge Certification Program, has done with their judging sheets. But you took a little bit of a different tact on this one.
That's right. I wanted to be able to quantify the different flavors that were perceived so we could actually compare the specific flavors. A lot of people, you know, especially BJCP judges and such, you'll often get comments that, you know, have the appropriate ester profile, or that they'll taste dominant fruity esters, and sometimes you get comments on which one specifically, and sometimes they leave it at that. So I didn't want to get a bunch of comments from the club members that just said they tasted fruity esters. I wanted to know what were the flavors, and were the flavors different between yeast strains.
You asked specifically on each of these yeasts, you asked overall impressions, whether the beer was malty, hoppy, or yeasty, and if it was yeasty, whether it was fruity or spicy. And then under yeast profile, you have divided into estery, fruity, and spicy. Those are two categories, estery slash fruity. And under that, you have apple, banana, blackberry, grape, grapefruit, lemon, orange, pear, plum, raspberry, and strawberry. And you do have a write-in on each of these categories. And then under spicy, you have cinnamon, clove, coriander, cumin, grains of paradise, oak, pepper, star anise, and vanilla. And then you have another category for malt profile, under which is biscuit, bread, bread crust, caramel, cracker dough, dried fruits, and under that, raisins, currants, prunes, dates, figs, and licorice, and then toast and toffee. And then under hop profile, you have spicy, citrusy, perfumey, soapy, and earthy. So each of those has a checkbox by it. So pretty simple. I mean, you wanted to make it, I guess, standardized to enable you to collect the data?
That's correct.
You must be in the data collection business.
A little bit.
Now, what were the impressions? So you worked with the Loggers Homebrewing Club?
Yes, we're the Louisville Area Grain and Extract Research Society. The one in Louisville. We're the Loggers from Louisville, not the one from when we go to the Nationals. There's another Loggers group, but we're the Louisville area group.
You're the better one.
No, we're the older one. Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky, that is, not Colorado.
I love the what people spell with the you know, suds and such as that. So what were the impressions, Leah, when you asked what? You asked 30 people within the club to participate? What was the reaction?
Well, it was very surprising. First, we got it all set up, and when we told them what we were going to do, they were very excited because, number one, it's free beer.
Mm.
And number two, we were really trying to collect data from it. And our club we've got over 100 people in our club, but that fluctuates from people attending meetings from about 30 to 50 that'll show up on every given month. So we can sort of get a mix of different people, but this one was pretty well attended and people were very enthusiastic about it. And so we handed out all of Christopher's sheets and pencils, and then we went and passed out the samples.
And then we had open kegs afterwards.
Yeah, which is always popular.
And so did you see, what was the reaction to the form itself? Because on the one hand, you know, you want to restrict the data or put it into neat little piles so that you can count it up easily. But on the other hand, you know, there is a write-in category there, but it kind of restricts the creativity or the kind of flexibility on, you know, some precise descriptors. For example, Alex Roberts was one of our tasters that we did, and he said mandarin orange, you know, instead of just orange. So he wasn't able to get as specific as he wanted. So what was the reaction to the form itself?
Oh, from the club members?
Yeah.
In talking to, because I was one of the people pouring the beers, I felt it was pretty, they were pretty happy that they had something to go by. We are working in our club to garner more BJCP judges. And so myself, Paul, and Christopher, and Chuck, we're all trying to get more people involved in the BJCP. And we're trying to then, with that, increase people's vocabulary in tasting.
Mm.
And they find that really helpful because they'll taste something and go, oh, that really tastes like fruit. And they, as we ask them to try to hone in on it, it's kind of hard to do unless you really give them something specific. And the way Christopher ran the experiment as we did it for the club, we would discuss what people were tasting and let people kind of shout it out. We did want them to write it on the sheet. And they did, but then we discussed it and then so people would then recognize what the aroma was, what was crossing their palate. If they couldn't put a name to it, somebody else was able to put a name to it in the room, and then that helped clarify that flavor for the others.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times when I'm tasting beer, I'll taste something I know it's a flavor that I've tasted before, but you don't expect it in a beer, so you don't like circus peanuts. You know, or bubble gum or something that you know you've tasted. You can identify that taste, but your brain hasn't made that connection yet. That circuit hasn't been laid there. And once somebody says, you know, mango or whatever, then you say, yeah, exactly, exactly. Or you know, butterscotch as a negative, flavor or an off flavor. But once that connection is made, then the next time they taste it, hopefully it'll be easier to make.
Right. And that was our hope in that part of the experiment as well. So not only were we going to learn about the yeast, but we were going to hopefully increase the palate and palate knowledge of our membership that was able to attend.
Excellent. Well, let's Andy Sparks and Alex Roberts and I sat down with these six samples a couple days ago, and we did our own little tasting, and here's what we came up with. Okay, Andy Sparks.
Hey, James.
That was not the best intro.
Yeah, no.
And Alex Roberts.
Hey, James.
See, Alex knew from your example how to answer the ambiguous intro there. We are here and we have just tasted six Belgian beers or six beers brewed with Belgian yeasts. And it was interesting. I guess at the beginning we all thought that this was going to be a tasting which we would be checking the banana descriptor most often, right?
Yeah, I certainly thought so, you know, based on, you know, my kind of, you know, past experience with brewing a few Belgians, you know, a lot of times that is the character that comes out, those estuary flavors and stuff. And it's kind of a, you know, a stereotype maybe of what these yeasts can produce. But, you know, you're right. We didn't check that box as many times as we thought.
What'd you think, Alex?
Yeah, I like the word stereotypical. I mean, you know, I thought I'd be going through and that's really all I would find, and I'd have to search for anything else because we did have so many choices with the estuary fruity. But yeah, I mean, it was fairly minimal, I thought.
Let before we get into the specific things that we found, let's talk about the form. I mean, this is different from the AHA or the BJCP form that is typically used on judging competitions. What did you guys think of the form?
I liked it. I know we talked about there were a little bit of, you know, places where we could see overlap, and, you know, there were questions of, you know, did we have to pick between just spicy, or could it be estuary, or could it be both? And there was a little bit of overlap in some of those, but I think overall it was a good starting point, and it did give you ideas that I don't think I would have necessarily thought of without actually seeing it on the form. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it kind of helps us force us to keep our answers aligned with each other, which I think makes the data collection process easier and the analysis of the data later easier. Yeah, I mean, if it was up to us, and I put notes at the bottom of mine because I'm so used to that kind of judging. But yeah, you know, it was really kind of trying to force us to answer each thing with a checkbox and not, you know, being able to write an answer, which is kind of our fallback.
Yeah, I think I can see pluses and minuses to it. I can see that it is handy for the data collection in the type of graphs that that were produced from it, that Christopher produced from it. But on the other hand, it is kind of pigeonholing you into forcing you to answer one way or the other. Whereas if you there are other write-in categories or, you know, write in answers in the categories, but it kind of forces you into those pigeonholes, which could be good and could be bad. I mean, it depends on what you find. I mean, for instance, I didn't taste any of this, but if you had an answer, say, you know, cotton candy or something like that, or circus peanuts, you know, it's not it's not on there. But it's interesting from the perspective of data collection. Were you guys surprised at the range of flavors that we got from this selection of yeasts?
Yeah, I was really surprised with the range of flavors. I was also surprised with, you know, on the majority of them, I would look at, you know, the flavors I would get and compare it to the brewery that these yeasts, you know, were derived from. And I had trouble actually, you know, seeing the resemblance between the two on a lot of these. It was a lot more than I expected. You know, I expected the Chimay, you know, to be the typical darker, you know, kind of sugary, kind of, you know, dark fruits and that kind of stuff. But I really didn't get hardly any of that out of number 500. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I was expecting to have a lot more aromatics on every single one of these. And while everyone did produce kind of esteriness and some aromatics, some were much more dominant than others, and some really produced a lot of perfume to your nose and aromatics that you get to smell when you start to drink the beer. And others tended to be a little less aromatic, actually some extremely less aromatic. And dry, and you know, in the end, when you're trying to engineer your beer and trying to get these flavors, I think this kind of information is going to be really valuable because it really helps you decide which yeast you're going to use to drive that kind of aromatic quality in your beer.
What were you guys' favorites? I mean, pick some interesting, the ones that you like the best.
I like 500 and 550, and I think one of the reasons I like 550 is, you know, it was the first one that I actually saw a resemblance between it and the actual brewery. I mean, it was the Schuf, you know, and, you know, I tasted some of the more typical Belgian qualities in that one. And I think 500 and 550 were probably my two favorite.
You know, I really liked the 500. Unfortunately, it was the very first one we tried. And so, in a way, it might have been interesting to try them in a different order and see if I found them as entertaining or as delicious. But I really liked the 500. It had that kind of classic banana character and, you know, some spiciness too. But I was really intrigued by the 540. I thought that it really brought out, in this exact same wort, it brought out all these kind of date and fig-like notes that, you know, I'm really thinking would really, you know, lend itself to some bigger beers, you know, doubles and maybe even like a barley wine or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I liked 500 and 570. Mainly because I guess I was trying to pair the yeast with the style of the wort. This is more kind of a sort of a golden ale triple wort. Mm-hmm. And to me, the 500 and the 570, that would be the Chimay and the Duvel yeasts, paired, I thought, most nicely with the wort. And the both of them, I thought, the 500 had a lot more banana character. It had the most banana character of any of them, in my opinion. But both of them, you guys got some more darker flavors and character from the 570 than I did. But the 540, we all thought that the 540, that's the Rochefort yeast, had some dark, that even in this light colored, this amber colored wort, brought out some dark, you know, I wrote down, you know, prune and date character to this beer. So I thought that, you know, and again, we all commented that this would be an interesting one to try on a double. So, you know, maybe the next time I try to do a dark colored Belgian beer, maybe the 540 is the one that that I would pick out. We looked at the graphics the graphic representation of the results was really cool, I thought, the way they were laid out. And it was interesting to see where we kind of agreed with the majority and where we kind of differed from the majority. What did you think, Alex? Coming from the engineering background, the kind of you analyze data all the time, what did you think?
Yeah. What really surprised me, and I know we talked about this, is when we looked at the dried fruit, you know, malt, and we looked at number 540, and basically, you know, every one of their data points was either, what was it, raisin or fig found in that one, and that was really quite surprising that, you know, I know they took several people and did this, and, you mm-hmm. know, every one of them either picked one of those two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just us three sitting around had all kind of found at least one differing than those two in that beer. And that's what kind of surprised me the most on seeing some of this, is that they did find one where, you know, all of them agreed it was either one of two things in the beer.
Right. And, you know, the idea of actually being able to say, you know, okay, I think I taste date, or I think I taste fig or raisin. Well, those are all fairly kind of similar, sweet, rich, dark flavors. And yeah, but I think the main thing is that it shows off that part of the beer, right? Mm-hmm. That it really brought out the malt profile of this wort, whereas some of the other ones really drove the yeast profile. The yeast, you know, showed off its fruity esters, but everything was the same except for the yeast. It's really fascinating.
Should we talk about our least favorites and why?
I'm afraid we might hurt some yeast feelings.
And they're still listening. They're still in the dregs of the bottles here.
That's true. Yeah, you know, I found like the 510 and the 530 were probably my least favorite. They both ended up being pretty dry beers, although I think in the notes they say the 510 was the least dry. It seemed to me to be also as just about as dry as the rest of them. But they had kind of the least, to me, at least to me, kind of the least exciting flavors, and to some degree, and not as much nose, not as much aromatics, which is really one of the things I'm going to be looking for in a Belgian beer, is to get those aromatics.
Yeah, the 510 is the Orval, according to the list here, and the 530 is the West Mall.
Yeah, I totally agree with Andy, you know, as far as, especially with the 530, where he said it was the least complex. I mean, it's really the only one that I didn't make any extensive notes other than, you know, just check a few of the boxes that they had. And I mean, if you just look at my note sheets, it definitely seems to be, you know, the simplest of them all as far as the flavor profile is concerned.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I've used some of these or several of these yeasts in the past, probably the 500 and the 550 the most. And maybe it's because, I mean, the brewing process that these guys went through to brew the beers and cold condition the beers and, you know, watching the fermentation temperatures, I'm not anywhere near that level of sophistication. So maybe if you dumb down the process, you know, as in brewing like I do these beers, maybe the differences aren't as stark. I don't know. It would be interesting to know that.
Well, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we were drinking these. This was a really, really well-made wort, and all the beers were top-notch, really. There were no flaws in the beers, except for the fact that they just didn't seem as impressive as maybe one before it or one after it. But it would be interesting to see, you know, if we did this exact same experiment with two or three other Belgian-style beers, you know, mm-hmm. like a triple, something like that, a really rich Belgian double. This was kind of a golden, a Belgian golden style. So, you know, I mean, if the yeast had more stuff to work with and play with, maybe they would be able to shine a little better. And we might say, wow, if I was doing something that brought to the table a lot of these rich malt characters to start with, well, maybe one of these other yeasts would then shine. And whereas it doesn't seem to on this lighter colored wort.
So maybe that's a challenge to the guys in Kentucky.
Send us more beer, right?
Send us another six pack. Well, guys, this has been fun. With all of these tastings, it's an adventure. And with every time we do this, we expand our knowledge. And I hope that we are able to pass that, at least a taste of that knowledge, on to other folks. And so I appreciate you guys taking time.
Well, thanks, James. Yeah, I would say, you know, this should be something that hopefully might trigger this kind of experimentation in other clubs around the country. And, you know, these guys really pulled out the stops and did a great, great thing here. But your club could do something like this too, and really enrich your own club with some really cool knowledge. And it's a bunch of fun too.
There you go. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's the kind of broad perspectives that we observations that we had on the samples, and we discovered that some of what we were tasting went along what y'all tasted, and you know some was a little bit different, but the fact that we could look at the results from this tasting with so much detail was awesome. Christopher, talk about the way that you broke down the descriptors and were able to chart them out visually.
Just did the stack proportion graphs, and I did it on multiple categories of the data. So over the overall data set, you know, breaking it down in very broad categories of say yeast, malt, or hops, and then getting into it deeper, if you just look at, say, the yeast characters, those are divided into two, fruity and spicy. And then you can also just look at the fruity components of the yeast characters. So it's from very general to very specific within each category.
Like for instance, if you were to look at, say, the spicy yeast characters, you've got these kind of bar graphs with they're color-coded, really cool. They get a little gradients on them. made on a Mac. but in each of the categories, like for instance in the White Labs 500, 540, 550, and 570, there are big, wide, pinkish-red areas for clove. Mm-hmm. So at a glance, you can see that those four strains were perceived to have a lot of clove in them. And the same with pepper. In those same ones, pepper was, I guess, mentioned more times out of the total. And so you get a bigger, wide blue indicator for that. And it's interesting also that just glancing at this, you can tell that some of these varieties, some of these strains, had sort of a lot more complex flavors and characters because in some of them, they don't have as many colors as the others. Does that make sense?
That's right. And you can also read from the graph, what I would say is how balanced are the flavors. So the more equal the bars are to each other, the more evenly they're represented within that style. So if you have one strain that has one very large bar and a couple of really tiny bars, by and large, that strain was dominated by that one character. Whereas if they have five bars and they're relatively the same size, then overall they were evenly tasted.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
So what I did is I each one of these represents a portion of the data for that particular taste character. So say vanilla. Out of the total number of descriptors total, how many of them were vanilla for that strain and for the next strain, and not just how many people tasted vanilla, but how many times was vanilla brought up for that strain? Because you could mark down multiple, you could have checked as many boxes or you could have checked no boxes. So it's per the total data set.
So the what was the biggest surprise? I mean, Paul, did you get to sit in on the tasting as well?
I did. I thought the biggest surprise was that, and it's one of the concerns I think we had when we were putting this this experiment together, was if we drink all of these side by side, are they going to be different enough that when we give them to the club, that it's going to be a worthwhile experiment, that they're going to, you know, that everyone's going to take something from each individual strain. And that was probably the biggest thing we discovered when we sat down and did the pre-test before we gave it to the club, was just that there was more dominating flavors in each yeast, that each yeast brought a certain flavor to the table, a certain character to the table. And overall, I saw from it, at least from at the shop, was once people had tried these different yeasts and they had at least maybe they had in their head what a certain, you know, what yeast they wanted to use for a recipe, they may have changed their mind and said, well, you know, I always use the 500, but I really like the characters the 550 gave. And so I definitely saw it from after the experiment, that end, where people were now deciding for themselves which strain fit the recipe the best for them. And I really enjoyed seeing.
And this document, I would assume, would be something that you could have handy in your shop to kind of help people pick out the yeast strain that they might want.
Yeah, and we're certainly working with the Loggers Club and other regional homebrew clubs and also LouisvilleBeer.com to bring all these kinds of experiments together, so that way it's hard to make every single beer, and it's hard. There's, very few brewers get the opportunity to brew, once a week, once a month. And when they brew each batch, I think they want to get the most out of the ingredients they're paying for. They want to make sure they're going to get the beer that they want. And just having these experiments on hand, having this information on hand, is very, very helpful.
One thing that, of course, there are a ton of variables that you could throw at this experiment, but one variable that I would be interested in seeing changed would be the you just used table sugar, is that correct?
That's correct.
So I think we were talking about the 540 bringing out some kind of dark fruit flavors, and that we picked it up and y'all did too. It would be really cool to see another round with some dark candy syrup in there to see what kind of characters were brought out by that as well.
Isn't that the next experiment?
That's right. We were toying around with the idea of making this a three-part series where the next one we take one strain and do all the different candy-colored candy sugars to see how that affects the flavors, and then do another one with manipulating temperature.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And,
but we've got a lot of people interested in Belgian style right now. I don't know if we're going to fall through with it or not.
Well, this experiment was I could see it from on my end, where a lot of people were very inspired by this to say, where you can brew these beers side by side and through, my shop and through the club, we'll give them the what they need to do these experiments. And so doing things with different sugars and changing these variables up, we're going to see a lot more of that, I think, at least in our club, and hopefully just more in general as brewers are getting more intelligent about what variables they can change and how that can affect their beers.
What was the favorite? I mean, which of these, which was the favorite yeast?
By and large, it was the 550. All of them, when you tasted them, you thought of Belgian beers when you tasted them right away because of the flavors you got in there. But most people identified the 550 as kind of just that classic, that's what they're used to buying at the store, Belgian character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because that may be helpful if you're wanting to compete with these beers, the one that maybe people recognize more as a classic strain might do better in competition than, say, the strain that people weren't used to.
Yeah, I think Alex, who drinks a lot of Belgian-style beers and Belgian, beers from Belgium, said that 550 reminded him most of the brewery that strain has, originated from. In other words, that was, the beer that he had was more true to the flavor of the beers that he's tasted from that brewery. So, that may be exactly what he's saying then.
Yeah, and that's an interesting part about the experiment in general too, where this was a very, very traditional recipe, and where these strains of yeast are going to have different reactions with the grain bill and the hop schedule that is relative to the beer that originates from that brewery. We in some cases this is very the just using Pilsner yeast and aromatic is different than a Rochefort 10 recipe, which one of these yeast strains is from. That's certainly going to change some stuff up too. So I think it was good in this experiment just to keep things basically as simple as possible, so that we were tasting the yeast. Similar as when we've done a hop experiment in the past, where the recipe, we could probably just do 2-row and 1056 and keep it as clean as possible and let the hop do all the work. So
right.
Certainly letting the yeast do all the work was really the most beneficial part here.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting because it really broadens what's acceptable for the style. There are some of these beers that, if you entered them in a competition, a judge might say something just doesn't taste right. You know, the ester profile is slightly off. In reality, it's just somebody used a different strain of yeast than what they're used to tasting. Mm. These are all Trappist strains, and
possibly at a different temperature, and possibly for a different amount of time.
So. Right, and so it's, you know, maybe nothing wrong with a particular beer. It's just the strain.
Yeah,
and of course,
for instance, on the 540, I got a real strong orange and orange pith character out of it. You know, the rind came out. You run the risk of something like that getting dinged to competition, because I've never tasted that from a strain before. So it was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. We also, I see marks on our paper for lemon on that as well, or the citrusy fruits as well. So very interesting. So Leah, do you see anything that you would do differently next time with the next set?
More beer. No. I think what we had discussed, because there were six of them, what happened in our group, it's facilitating the tasting, getting the taste to the people. But what happened was it took a little too much time, and we started to lose our audience, because it did take a while to get the beers to, you know, that large of a group.
Mm-hmm.
As much as they gave us their full attention, which was great, because they were really excited about it. But I think we started to lose them near the end, because there were six of them. So I think next time Christopher and I discussed that maybe we would make the experiment, maybe four of them, maybe do a pre-experiment and then cut it down, and then we're not overwhelming our audience.
Yeah. Yeah, we were experiencing some of the same thing. It's like number four and five, we took a little less time than the other
right,
four.
Right.
The data sheets reflected that as well.
Yeah, but we found that even with our small group of four BJCP judges, I mean, and we're used to doing, you know, 12 beers in a flight, even if they are Belgians.
Right.
Near the end, your palate gets a little blurred, and we're experienced tasters, so you can imagine what our folks were doing at the club meeting.
Yet another reason we didn't go with a full strength triple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a little more chatty at the end as well, so we're comparing notes as we're so yeah, that's the part of the risk of the endeavor, I guess.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we are, for those who are curious, we are going to work to get this, both the results and the form out there in a PDF that we'll put a link in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And so that I hope that that other clubs across the country will take a look at this, and I hope that it will spark some interest and get the ball rolling in other places. And if they have some questions on how you tabulated the results, can I send them to you, Christopher?
Sure,
that'd be awesome. I think this is a lot of fun, and I really appreciate y'all including us in on this. And I hope that it will educate the folks out there and give them some guidance, because it is confusing when you're picking yeast strains, you know, as to which style you want to brew and which way you want to go. So I think this is a lot of fun.
You know, but beforehand, I would have gone in to pick my yeast strain based on which brewery I like the best, which other beer I like the best, you know. And, you know, say for instance, you know, Chimay is the one you're most familiar with. That's what you go by. But maybe really the flavors you want come from Roquefort or, you know, the Duvel strain or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent. Well, thanks again, everybody. I appreciate y'all taking time out, and I hope that you'll think of us in the future.
Will do.
Well, thanks again to Christopher Owen, Leah Dinas, and Paul Young. Excellent experiment. I really appreciate being included in the discussion. Also, thanks to Andy Sparks of thehomebrewery.com and Alex Roberts, as usual. And one addendum clarification or correction from Christopher. He says towards the end of the interview, he referenced The White Labs 540 as having the orange and orange pith character, but in fact it was the White Labs 510 that he said had the orangey pithy character. So I appreciate the clarification, and I appreciate Christopher making a PDF of not only all of the results from the experiment and all the clever graphs that he produced, but also at the end of the document, you'll find the form that everybody used to evaluate the yeasts, evaluate the beers. So if you want to do this experiment with your homebrew club, you can use that as kind of the template. And as usual, you can find that in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. Please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is available to order right now. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Monster High Dead Tired Draculaura Doll and 5 Dell Ultra Sharp 24-inch LED LCD monitors. I assume they all came from the same person, so thank you very, very much for clicking on us when you're buying your computer stuff and your Draculaura dolls. I've never seen that. You learn something new every day. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate link on basicbrewing.com. And don't forget to register for the National Homebrewers Conference that opens on February 1st. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.